there's so many different things that you learn and just absorb from getting to network with like-minded people going through the exact same process that you're going through when you go through something like an independent press. And being somebody that's gone through both of those processes is invaluable. The experience and the community, it's just a more fun, fulfilling experience.
We hear a lot from authors who are published on the Thriller 101 podcast, and I also get the opportunity to share writers who are submitting to agents through the Thriller 101 pitch contest, which if you want more information about, there's a link in the description where you can find out more. However, it's rare that we get to hear from someone who's in the middle of that publishing process. My guest today has signed with an indie press and his book comes out in 2024, but he's in the process of editing and revising before the book can go to publication. This is an interesting perspective that honestly, as writers, we can learn a lot from and we don't hear enough about. I'm David Gwynn, an agented writer navigating the world of traditional publishing. During this first season of the Thriller 101 podcast, we're going to focus on building the skills necessary to write the kind of thrillers that land you an agent and readers. I'm talking to agents, authors, and other industry professionals about the best way to write a novel. If you want the expert secrets, this is where you're going to find them. Last time on the podcast, I talked to Ellie Monago about her newest novel.
So I like a big playing field for everybody, and I'm hoping that's the way things are going, because then that can hopefully get more people reading, that can get more writers feeling like they're not boxed out of things, because there is a real fear of, like, if your sales track record isn't good, right? How do I get my next agent? How do I get a book? How does the agent sell me? I feel like maybe you don't have to worry quite as much about that. You can worry more about the work that you're actually producing. You get more chances, you know, more venues, more chances.
That episode is linked in the description if you want to check that out. Today's guest is Matt Shao. He writes under M.E. Shao, and he began writing in August of 2015, immediately following the loss of his beloved mother, Elizabeth Louise. His debut work, a science fiction novel entitled Continuity, is scheduled for release in December of 2024 from Wild Inc. Publishing. Matt, thanks so much for being here and being a part of the podcast.
I appreciate it. I'm so happy and excited to be here.
Yeah, so we're talking because I'm really curious about where you are in the project that you're working on. So your novel, Continuity, comes out in December. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
It started in the wake of losing my mom. So that was what got my kind of writing path started. And the story it started, I was posting it like one chapter at a time, because I always wanted to write growing up, but I never kind of like thought that was kind of a reality that I might, you know, be able to achieve or anything. So when I first started, I was just posting it one chapter at a time, just in a fit of grief, you know, and depression or whatever. But as it went on and on and on, and people like in my immediate social media network and whatnot, that's kind of who was reading it. They were like, you know, you should look into maybe publishing this, maybe writing an actual book. So that's kind of how it started. And that evolved to me sitting down and just locking myself in a bedroom for 3 months and making it an actual book. And at the time, I literally Googled. I didn't know anything about the publishing industry or, you know, how to get into it or whatever, because I was an insurance agent at the time. That was the first 10 years of my life. And I literally Googled how to publish a book. And I guess at the time, since it was kind of like a grief-struck process, like my priorities weren't really as well catered towards like the whole publishing it properly as much as it should have been. I guess I was concerned with just like getting the story out there and just like pouring my heart out, you know? And so when I Googled it, you know, I got all these different results or whatever, and I just kind of jumped right in and got set up with what I now know is a vanity press. And that's, yeah, so that's how I self-published or whatever. And that was, so I wrote it in 2015. I think the first book came out in 2016. And then I wrote a sequel that came out 2 years later. And throughout, you know, over the years or whatever, I learned more and more of how the publishing process worked and whatnot. And I kind of realized like what I would have done differently in hindsight. So throughout that process, I was part of different like online communities and stuff like that. And I got hooked up with Abigail at Wild Ink Press, who saw the story, like, because I didn't really do much for marketing and all that. Because like I said, I was kind of like that, I had that sort of starving artist syndrome where I was just absorbed in the actual material. I wasn't really concerned with, like, you know, at the time, I, like, you know, becoming like a J.K. Rowling.
Right.
So she saw the story and was like, hey, we can, you know, this is marketable or whatever. So we got hooked up together, and what she'd done, or they've done at Wild Ink, is consolidated those two books into one and slated it for a release in December. So that's how that publishing process, that's where I am now, at least.
That's so cool. And so tell us a little bit about the project. What is the story?
Since it was written in the wake of losing my mom, I was in a position where I was kind of jaded, and in terms of, you know, worldview, because I was raised in sort of a really polarized parental dynamic, I guess. Like, mom was to me like a saint, right? And I had, to put it delicately, like a somewhat challenging father. So losing her, like, I was in this process of grief or whatever. Like, I even struggled with, you know, God, you know, blaming him for, like, taking the wrong parent and stuff like that. So I was in a really jaded point in my life. So, and that trickled over into kind of my worldviews and how we've built, I don't know, like, I got really jaded in terms of how we've built, like, our societies and our just civilization in general. And how, you know, at the time that, you know, I was thinking about, like, corruption going on and all these different things, and how essentially bad behavior can sometimes be rewarded in society and whatnot. So I was really jaded in that. So the story itself kind of manifested as casting a lens on that. And the way that I sort of approached it was, I mean, first and foremost, it's a sci-fi thriller, almost political satire for entertainment. I mean, that was my, you know, obvious first, but thematically it was trying to cast a lens on what we've done as a species and just how we've created our societies and whatnot. So it kind of manifests as there's an existential threat. There's an asteroid that's on the way or whatever. And, you know, Earth is going through all of these conventional ways that you would see in a typical asteroid. You know, there's a million of them out there, maybe, like, you know, they're building a ship that's going to, you know, direct it off course and all this other stuff. So the main character, though, is this guy who is a off the wall thinking, kind of bizarre, far-fetched idea, creative marketing consultant that comes up all these crazy ideas, turn businesses around with using these unconventional approaches and ideas and stuff. So he's also got this burning desire, like, within to kind of be meaningful, like, do something with his life that, you know, impacts the world in some way. So he feels kind of unfulfilled and just teaching people how to sell stuff. So when this happens, he gets to thinking, he's like watching, you know, I don't say it specifically, but essentially a version of Ancient Aliens in the story or whatever. He's like watching this crazy haired guy, you know, the aliens meme dude that we all know. And he's like, and it goes to his mind, he's like, you know, I bet that there's another civilization out there in the cosmos that's had to deal with this. Like, and then his mind, he's like, surely somebody has done this before and directed, you know. So he's like, well, why don't we get help from them? So what he does is takes a leave of absence from work and builds this signal to kind of broadcast out to the cosmos our predicament, more or less. You know, he looks up, he does, like, you know, to make it sound like it was something, like, reasonable, like, he has the income through his job to, like, build this signal or whatever. And he builds this thing where he just broadcasts our predicament out to the cosmos and hopes that somebody will come investigate. And then we can sort of ask them for their assistance. And that, you know, and all going on behind the scenes, like, the world doesn't know anything about this guy. Like, he's just doing this on his own or whatever. So inadvertently, what happens is it ends up panning out. And I will, you know, spoil the story in terms of whether or not we get help or whatever.
Yeah, keep us on the edge.
but what inadvertently ends up happening is the people that end up responding is this representative of a massive organization of, I think, like Star Trek, for example. Like, they're meant to, you know, discover new species and all of that, how they're all about exploration. So that's this organization, which is essentially the Galactic Country Club, you know, that it's part of, and they've all evolved culturally and, you know, into a place where they just all coalesce and get along, and they've kind of and evolved beyond like war and all of the things that we deal with here, you know, on Earth. So they come investigate and send their ship that's a part of this whole what's called an induction process. And their induction program is meant to measure and gauge societies that they discover and decide whether or not they're worthy, essentially, of joining their organization. Yeah, so you can imagine they're, you know, as far as the timing is concerned of when they're coming to investigate us, because during, like, you know, during all of Carson's main character, like, stuff that's going on or whatever, like, in other, like, side plot or whatever, there's government conspiracies going on and stuff that the antagonist, the main antagonist is doing that kind of is, you know, more earthly concerns that, you know, that is going and causes society to collapse, essentially, because what happens is, you know, this asteroid is basically going to destroy Earth and everything. And where what the antagonist is doing kind of makes that certain. So he discovers there's certain things that are going on behind the scenes. And this is part of that whole jaded process that I was talking about like corruption and all that. There was a cover up, for example, of the timing of this asteroid that causes society to collapse. So these aliens are coming at what is essentially our worst, our darkest time, you know, imaginable, and determining whether or not we're worthy of like joining them. So you imagine, you know, how that all ended up panning out, which, you know, there is a sequel, which would have been the third book, but since it's been consolidated, it's going to be the second one that's going to follow up to this, whatever. But so, yeah, that's kind of where the story goes and how that all came to be. So
talk a little bit about this process. You had two books and you consolidated it into one. What does that look like? I mean, where do you even start with something like that?
It's funny because, so it was written in 2015, and I don't know how much of your audience, whatever, like follows the whole ufology, you know, whatever dynamic, whatever, but in 2017, decided to come out with a lot of information. And they come out with this whole UAP program. And so like in actual real world now, like they've basically acknowledged that we've had these UAP UFO programs actually going on. So it's kind of funny because when I wrote it in 2015, none of that was known. And it was still kind of like, you know, on the fringe of society, whatever, like covered up and whatnot. So now with like David Grush, for example, who had the congressional hearing in front of, you know, he was in front of Congress, like a whistleblower talking about UFOs and stuff like that. And all this stuff that these programs that government has really had going on, I had to rewrite a lot of it. Carson's the main character when he's doing his research and all of this, like in the book, he at the time was, you know, like none of that was known. So and we decided to republish this book. There's a lot more real world information out there that has posted and whatnot. So I had to rehash a lot of that and like scramble to make it consistent with what's really going on, because the story is really meant to be like kind of a mirror to what's going on currently in society. So a lot of that had to be redone. So that was actually part of the whole process. It was a funny, but stressful, you know, process or whatever. But yeah, it was definitely an interesting thing because when I self-published it, I mean, it wasn't marketed to enough people to really matter. It's been a book before and now it's like a different book. Like I wasn't exposed to enough people, honestly, to where that would really make a difference. So really, I mean, release is kind of the way my actual kind of debut, the way I'm viewing it.
Okay, let's pause there for a second. So far, we've heard about how his book went from two books into one, and even how he went from self-published to now a more traditional route. We hear all the time about how self-published books can't be pitched to agents because it's hard to sell to publishers. But there's a few things happening here that I think make it unique. First, Matt's working with a small publisher. which means they have a little bit more flexibility when it comes to what they acquire. Second, theirs is a massive overhaul. I mean, so much has changed from 2015, as Matt says, and the book is likely going to look very different. And then third, even though it was self-published, it doesn't sound like it had a huge reach because that wasn't Matt's intent. So these things combined to make it possible for him to re-release it with a small press. In the next part of the interview, Matt's going to share where his book is now in the publishing pipeline and what he has coming up. Again, I think this creates an interesting view for writers about the process, about signing with a publisher, and before that book gets published that we don't often get to hear about. Matt also talks about what it's like working with a small indie press and compares it to his experiences in self-publishing. Let's head back to the interview.
My audience is largely made up of writers. A lot of them want to go traditional, whether that means independent publishers, small indies, like, you know, through the agent process, whatever it is. So can you talk a little bit about the independent process? I mean, where are you now with this book? Is it like full ready to go? Like, what was it even like kind of going through those stages with an independent press in a way that obviously, you know, you have that background with self-publishing, but not in a way that was restrictive of what you were doing. So can you just talk a little bit about what your experience was like working with a small indie press?
Yeah, it's been good. It's been great so far. I mean, honestly, so I mean, it is ready. Like it's going through the editing process right now. Then I have Wild Ink has a really good chronology of like when a book is going, like what stages it's going to start. Like in May, for example, it's going to the initial editing stages, and then, you know, we're going to bounce back ideas on whatever suggestions or whatever. It'll be a finished product probably, I would imagine, by like the August point, and then that's graphic design and all of that. But so rewriting it and whatnot, that was my task. Like I knew that and to get it, you know, ready for post. So it is in a position where it is ready for post editing and publishing and all that. So, but I do definitely have a unique experience, I guess, because this is I haven't heard of many books that probably have been through both stages. But like, I'm sure most writers have probably been self-published and transitioned into traditional publishing, but I don't know how many examples of an actual book itself has gone through those two processes. Maybe that is something that's more common than I know, but I don't know myself of any of many books that have gone through both processes together. But it was a matter of the story. Again, when I self-published it and with the limited scope of who I marketed it to, it was almost more of like a passion project for me individually, more so than an actual like commercial marketable book. When you go through like a vanity press or whatever, like even though it is available to people, like through all the traditional outlets or whatever, like you would have to really specifically know to look for it to ever be exposed to it. It's not like it's going to be popping up on your, you know, your news feeds,
right,
or anything. And whatnot. The way I view it is sort of, it was a really good long learning experience that gave me. And in hindsight, like honestly, I don't really know if I would do it different. I am extremely thankful for the learning process and like how much is, I guess, got like the intimate view into both realms that I've gained from, you know, from both experiences and having done it both ways.
Yeah, it's always interesting to hear from different perspectives. And I've talked to people who are, you know, big five publishers. I've talked to people who are indie press. I've talked to self-published. And I really think there's a real big push right now for independent publishers in a really great way. I think a lot of people are recognizing that, you know, the big five tends to publish people that they think are just going to make them a ton of money and be marketable. And I think indie presses, and I think Wild Ink is a good example of this, of doing books that they just really like and putting books out there that they feel really passionate about. And I think that's awesome. I think it's great for readers, and I think it's great for writers as well. And so obviously, you know, like I mentioned, this podcast, people who listen are mainly writers and people who want to be where you are, which is the editing process. And, you know, you've got kind of maybe not a firm date, but you know, the book's coming out in this year. And so If you were to talk to them, people who are listening, who are writers and are in the process now of either querying or looking for independent publishers or whatever it is, what do you think that one thing that you would want them to hear before they go about their day? What do you think that would be?
I would say if I'm a writer and I'm looking at that kind of crossroads of whether I want to like self-publish or if I want to go traditional like indie press, you know, one of the biggest signposts that is enticing me to go towards the self-publishing route is going to be that royalty difference, because I know a lot of people consider the self-publishing route because obviously you're not splitting that royalty, right? So I make, say, I don't know, just for example, like $7 to $9 on a sale of a book versus like 2 to 4 if you're splitting it with a publisher. But the experience that I've had through going through Wild Ink is the trade-off, I think, is the community, the knowledge, and the expertise that I've been able to sort of thought mine from just to put it into a straight up day-by-day experience context is the Slack group that I'm in. I'm in a Slack group with dozens of other authors in Wild Ink. If you're doing something when you're self-publishing, I mean, you're basically on an island by yourself. I mean, you are doing everything yourself. You're doing the content, the creative thought, the marketing, all of those things you're doing on your own. And depending on how, you know, your Google prowess, like that's going to determine sort of your success. And not to mention the ridiculously complex algorithms and social media things and obstacles that we have to navigate when it comes to marketing ourselves, right? So the things that I have, and my book isn't even out yet, and I've already, like, even with my side stuff, like freelance writing and stuff like that, like Medium and whatnot, like I made my first $1.16 on Medium like last month. Like that was big for me, you know. Like that was a milestone. Like it's one of those things. It's like there's so many different things I wasn't doing before, and that was a recommendation that I had gotten from my Slack group. So there's so many different things that you learn and just absorb from getting to network with like-minded people going through the exact same process that you're going through when you go through something like an independent press, like Wild Ink, you know, or they are partnered with like Conquest Publishing, for example. So that to me, and being somebody that's gone through both of those processes, is invaluable. I mean, in hindsight, that's, if I were at that crossroads now, invariably I would go towards the traditional indie press unquestionably. And that's not to detract from people that can figure it out on their own. I mean, if you're able to do that, then more power to you. Like, you know, I envy you because I wasn't able to figure that out. Granted, I had all that grief and stuff like going on or whatever, but still, like if you can figure that out, then do it. And to me, it's even not even just economically speaking, but like the experience and the community of you know, it's just a more fun, fulfilling experience, you know, to do it with people that are like-minded that you get along. It's like a family, you know, really like being part of a family.
That's cool. Yeah, that's very cool. And what a great place to kind of end this. So my last question for you is just, where can people find you? Where can people look you up?
Yeah. So I write under M.E. Shao. That's my pen name. You can find me on Medium. I've got a Substack. M.E. Shao Words is usually my handle on most things. My personal website is, again, I was jaded. So my website is howtheworldshouldwork.com. I post a lot of my I'm big on poetry. Like I said, a starving artist. I'm a poet, so I write poetry, you know. So yeah, so howtheworldshouldwork.com, Emmy Shell Words. That's pretty much where you can find me.
Nice, good. And I'll link to some of that stuff so people have quick access to you. This was so much fun. I'm really glad we got the opportunity to talk.
Yeah, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Okay, so that's it. Matt shared a lot about the process of working with a publisher, as well as the pros and cons of indie publishing versus self-publishing. This is a great companion episode to the previous one where we talked to Ellie Monago about the differences between working with an agent and indie publishing. Again, that episode is in the description if you want to check that out. Reminder, I write a weekly newsletter through Thriller 101 with exclusive information, advice, and updates you only get from the newsletter. I talk about goal setting, systems, productivity, and I share the best resources and advice for thriller writers from all around the internet. If you want to level up your writing skills, be sure to subscribe. There's a link in the description where you can do that. Next time on the podcast, I'll be talking to the talented Heather Levy about how to organically develop backstory. She was so much fun to talk to and so knowledgeable, so be sure to subscribe so you get notified when that episode is released, and I'll see you next week.